a great show.
It's gonna be delicious. No? Oh, there's no. Okay.
You've been listening to Pacific Underground with Tabitha Teo.
I'm Jenna.
I'm Kanan. And we'll catch you in 3 weeks.
Thanks for listening.
Liberation Literacy is a racial justice reading group at Columbia River Correctional Institution in Portland.
We are students of revolutionary politics that have long been forgotten. The Harriet Tubmans, the Nat Turners, the Angela Davises, and the Malcolm X's, who recognized the systemic injustice in our country and saw themselves as active agents in fighting for change.
We meet weekly to discuss and reimagine the relationship between incarceration, our community, and ourselves.
Tune in to Prison Pipeline on July 10th to hear our discussion with National Book Award winner, historian Dr. Ibram X. Kendi, about his book, Stamped from the Beginning.
That's Prison Pipeline, July 10th at 6:30 p.m.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up at 10, we got Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with your host, Chris Andre. Followed at 10:15 with the Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And we thank Pacifica Radio and KPFA in Berkeley for sharing that with us here in Cascadia. It's 10 o'clock in the AM at KBOO Portland. All that and more is coming, so stay tuned.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Friday, July 7th, 2017, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio, your sanctuary radio, your resistance radio, your whistleblower radio at 90.7 FM on the air, KBOO.FM everywhere. We have some weather for you for today and throughout the weekend. Today, sunny skies after this refreshing gray burns away, and we eventually will see, they say, a high around 82. For tonight, mostly cloudy skies, lows around 59. Saturday, mostly sunny, highs around 86. Saturday night, temperatures dropping off to about 59 degrees or thereabouts. For Sunday, mostly sunny again, highs around 84. And Sunday night, overcast skies with a low around 60. And no wind worth mentioning, apparently. So say those on high at the National Weather Service. That's your weather, bringing you full circle to Monday morning. And today's guest right here, right now, on Friday, July 7th, we have Christine Hong. Okay, just a few notes we want to get to briefly before we speak with Christine. She's an exceptional guest. And I don't know if anyone is familiar with her investigative reporting or not, if you may have seen a recent piece in The Progressive. Nonetheless, she is somebody well worth following. I cannot possibly stress how extraordinary her work is. Before we get to that, however, I just want to have a quick mention on Bears Ears. Public land is essential that we stand together right now and stand strong in solidarity to protect our rights on as far as our land, our public land, is concerned. This is the last weekend to comment on Bears Ears. I can post on the KBOO website, or you can leave it at the front desk, which for you. But be sure to weigh in on that. It's a matter of real urgency. We did it with Elliott State Forest. We could do it with Bears Ears. You can call Secretary Zinke on Monday. Let him know that the Bears Ears National Monument, and indeed really all of the monuments, are important to all of us. And they do indeed bind us together as a country. Protecting these areas is vital to the survival of our notion of national unity, whatever that might mean in these dark times. So that said, I don't want to take any more time away from our guest today, Christine Hong. She's an associate professor at the University of California, Santa Cruz, an executive board member of the Korea Policy Institute, and wow, she debunks the widely repeated notion that the Obama administration had a policy of strategic patience towards North Korea. This is pretty much everything Obama or anybody else has said about North Korea is as wrong as you might guess it to be. If you took a clear-headed look at facts on the ground, I want to just leave it to Christine to talk about this, her piece recently, The Long Dirty History of U.S. Warmongering Against North Korea. This is in The Progressive. This is an extraordinary article. I commend it to everyone's attention. Let me just say that again. It's a long, dirty history of U.S. warmongering against North Korea. Have a look at that. Have a look at other writings of Christine Hong's. I think that you will find that to be an eye-opening, mind-opening experience. So with that said, I want to welcome Christine Hong to the KBOO Airwaves, to Air Cascadia, and introduce her to all of you out there listening. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning, Chris.
I am so very happy to have you on the program today. As Donald Trump and Putin are winding up their talks, and no doubt, our esteemed President Donald Trump is not thinking about what he should be saying to Putin, but probably circling the issue of North Korea, which apparently Donald Trump loves. The rest of us are deeply confused, and I am so happy to have you on the program, because these are things that I've thought a lot about. I followed the election closely. When Moon won, I was celebrating. I was so happy that he came out on top. So tell us a little bit about that article. Just set the stage, if you wouldn't mind.
I think that the one thing that most Americans are surprisingly unaware of is the fact that underlying U.S. policy toward North Korea, and indeed U.S.-North Korean relations, if you will, is the fact that the Korean War is not yet over. And, you know, most people think, oh, the Korean War, that was that thing that happened in the dim recesses of the 1950s, you know, during the time of McCarthyism, and there certainly was no mass protest, you know, there's nothing akin to the mass mobilization of people on the ground against the Vietnam War, for example. But the Korean War, we have to understand, was a very dirty war. It was a war of U.S. aggression, and it was a war that was asymmetrical in nature. The United States, according to the historian Bruce Cummings, absolutely owned the skies. And according to Cummings, the United States perpetrated a bombing holocaust on the Korean Peninsula. An estimated, and I know this is a statistic and we're sort of inoculated to the power of these numbers, but an estimated 4 million Koreans were killed, 70% of whom were civilians. And
wait a moment. Just say that again for listeners. That's difficult to take in, and it certainly goes a long way towards explaining why today North Korea has not recovered from that.
Well, I think that what you have in North Korea is you have what is, you know, unlike our Defense Department, which is actually it's a specious renomination of what was the War Department, and we are, as Martin Luther King Jr. stated, the greatest purveyor of violence around the world. So, you know, we do not have a Defense Department, we have a War Department. North Korea actually has been on a defensive posture since its inception as a state in 1948, and basically it's been in the crosshairs of the U.S. war machine, and it's been threatened with nuclear annihilation multiple times by the United States, and, you know, that's something that we should maybe discuss a little bit more at length and in detail. But what I'll say is that 4 million people during the hot fighting period of the Korean War, which is not over, were killed, and 70% were civilians. Chinese statistics indicate that North Korea lost 30% of its population. The United States was absolutely unrestrained in its bombing campaigns. Not only did it use napalm, but it also destroyed anything that had to do with civilian infrastructure, which is considered a war crime, including dams, etc. And so when you go to North Korea, it's not, you know, people here think that North Koreans are so brainwashed, they're so reactionary, they're so, you know, that they've been duped, they've drunk the Kool-Aid of anti-Americanism. In point of fact, you cannot find a North Korean family that wasn't harmed by the violence of the Korean War. And so North Korea has persistently asked the United States for a peace treaty. And this is throughout the entirety of its history. You know, it has asked for a peace treaty to end the Korean War. The 1953 armistice agreement indicated that the signatories to that agreement, China, North Korea, and the United States, should return to the negotiating table within 90 days' time, within 3 months' time, and hammer out a permanent peace agreement. And it also, that armistice agreement indicated that all foreign forces should be withdrawn from the Korean Peninsula. Well, there was no peace agreement that was ever hammered out. You know, China withdrew its forces within 5 years' time from the northern part of the peninsula. The United States, to this day, stations approximately 30,000 forces south of the DMZ. It operates approximately 100 military installations, including major bases. It conducts annual war games with its South Korean ally that are absolutely massive in scale. They are indeed the largest in the world, and these simulate the invasion and the occupation of the North. They also simulate a nuclear first strike against the North. And they simulate in recent exercises the decapitation of the North Korean leadership. North Korea has stated that if the United States ceases this, if it suspends its war games, that it will actually suspend or cap its nuclear program. Not do away with, but cap its nuclear program. China has reiterated this proposal as a reasonable one to the United States. The United States hasn't seen fit to respond. So the United States, despite North Korea, it's, you know, you always hear about North Korea being quote-unquote provocative. You hear about North Korea like wanting to destroy the United States. There's no critical understanding of the fact that we, this country, destroyed North Korea. And North Korea, one of its symbols is, and I write about this in that piece, is the phoenix. And it's no coincidence that that's the case. It literally rose from the ashes of apocalyptic destruction. And so, you know, what I'd also say about our present moment is the fact that, you know, let's talk about the sort of nuclear, the sort of apocalyptic imagination that the United States has had toward North Korea. At mid-century, at the hot fighting period of the Korean War, General MacArthur entertained using anywhere from 30 to 50 atomic bombs to create a cobalt zone where no life could live between North Korea and China. his thinking was that way.
30
China
to
could
50.
Not come to North Korea's aid.
30 to 50, that's absolutely staggering.
It's staggering. And so he thought that it could be a zone where no life could live.
Yes.
And then when North Korea in the late 60s actually captured the USS Pueblo, which was U.S. naval spy ship, when it captured that, again, the United States threatened North Korea with nuclear annihilation. And we're talking about, like, with every successive decade, the nuclear weaponry of the United States makes the bombs that were used at Hiroshima and Nagasaki look like child's play. And then if you fast forward to the post-Cold War period, William Perry, who was the Secretary of Defense under Bill Clinton, actually contemplated a nuclear first strike against North Korea, and Colin Powell actually, in a kind of curious turn of phrase, described turning North Korea into a charcoal briquette. And then fast forward from there to the George W. Bush era, the Axis of Evil era, The Pentagon issued under the George W. Bush presidency a nuclear posture review in 2002.
Hang on a second. We've got pretty much not any time left. But I want to ask you very briefly. You write, to be clear, peaceful alternatives are at hand. What has North Korea offered the U.S. that the U.S. has lied about, hidden, and completely buried, as it were?
Right. It has offered to suspend its nuclear program in exchange for the United States ceasing its war games. And right now, Moon Jae-in, who you mentioned, the South Korean president, who is a human rights lawyer, he's now in Germany at the G20, and he stated there that there can never be an active outbreak of war again on the Korean Peninsula. And he has stated that it's imperative that those parties that are signatories to the armistice agreement return to the negotiating table, even belatedly, and that finally a long overdue end to the Korean War is a top priority.
And that could be done literally now. They could do it at the G20. This is extraordinary.